became one of Britain's first black MPs, Bernie Grant, faces an audience of teenagers from around Britain in the first of a new series of Open to Question.
Tonight our guest is a man whom the tabloids have dubbed Barney Bernie. He's also the man whom the electors of Tottenham chose in June as one of Britain's first black MPs. Bernie Grant is Open to Question. Bernie Grant first came to national prominence in 1985 as leader of the Haringey Council in London, with his reported remarks that the police had been given a bloody good hiding in the Broadwater Farm Estate riots. However, in his local area, he was best known as an articulate spokesman for young blacks and as a councillor who always considered youth amenities a top priority. Selected as a candidate for Tottenham, Bernie Grant was elected earlier this year as the first black MP in over 50 years. Bernie Grant, you've often objected to the fact that you're best remembered perhaps for only seven words. I wonder, why did you say those words at the time of the riots?
Well, I think that I want to place it on record in Scotland that what I actually said is that the youth believed that the police got a bloody good hiding. Now, the reason I said that was because it was true. That was the feeling on the Broadwater Farm Estate at the time, and that was the feeling within Tottenham, because you have to understand that at that time particularly, there was almost a war going on between young people and the police, young black people particularly and the police. And the young people at that time felt that they had won that particular battle.
But
so
you must have believed that it might be misunderstood and would leave you very open to attack. I wonder then, wasn't it an inappropriate thing to say at the least?
Well, I don't think so. I didn't actually think very hard before I said it. At that time, you must appreciate that it was a very emotional period. There were things happening that were very extraordinary. And what I said, I just said at the time because that was the feeling at the time. I don't think that it was inappropriate, and I certainly stand by what I said at that time.
We want to look now at a later part of your career, your election. The first question coming from Kitty Muir.
Mr. Grant, once people get used to the idea of you being black and outspoken, how are you going to attract the attention of the public?
Well, I think that the public must understand that I am operating on the basis of how I feel. I'm putting across I'm representing the people of Tottenham, all the people of Tottenham, white, black. And I'm also putting forward, but I'm also putting forward particularly the views of people who haven't been heard before within the society, disadvantaged people and so on. And I think that the public has got to accept me as I am, because, I mean, I'm representing people, I'm speaking for people. Now, you know, you said that once the public have got accustomed to me being black and outspoken, I don't know whether that will ever happen. I think that there are a large number of people who don't accept me because I'm black, and particularly because I'm black, not because I'm outspoken, because there have been many MPs who've been outspoken over a period of time.
Pat Roberts.
Mr. Grant, a member of the Haringey Council describes you to be one of the most evil men he has ever encountered in politics. What is your reaction towards this allegation?
I've always been trying to find this person. For years now, I've been accused of this. I can't actually find this councillor. I think it was just made up by the Sun, because certainly no councillor has ever actually said that to me, and I haven't heard that sort of statement within any Labour group.
It was quoted in the Financial Times as well, yeah, as the Sun, however.
Well, I don't know. Maybe maybe somebody did say it, but I just haven't been able to find that person.
Andrew Roberts.
Do you think people voted for you because you're black or because you were the Labour candidate?
I think people voted for me primarily because I was a Labour candidate. But I think that a large proportion of people voted for me because I was black. Can I also say that the converse to that was also true? A lot of people didn't vote for me because I was black. But I think that in Tottenham, which has a large proportion of people from black and other groups like Irish groups and so on. You know, I had a lot of support from those people who were minority ethnic people.
Roger Henry.
You wore your tribal kaftan and orange beads to the opening of Parliament. Why was it? Was you trying to put something across to people?
I wore a dashiki, I think, rather than a kaftan. I think that I made a statement when I wore those beads to say that, you know, I'm not only representing black people in Tottenham as well as other people in Tottenham, but there is an international dimension to a black MP and a black politician, because we get lobbied by people from all over the world. So I think that was a bit of a statement to say that I'm here, but, and I'm also going to take on international issues.
Yes.
Mr. Grant, I mean, you did wear your kaftan or dashiki.
Dashiki.
Dashiki. But, I mean, you don't see the SNPs running around in kilts and dirks.
I wonder why not. I wish they would. It would make Parliament a much more colourful place. there's a Tory MP who actually wore a kilt when I was in Parliament the other day, and I noticed that the Speaker didn't call him to order or anything. But I wish the Scottish MPs would wear kilts. I think that it would begin to show to the people of Britain that Britain isn't just a load of bowler-hatted and pinstripe-suited people, that we're representing all sorts.
Yes.
Mr. Grant, do you deliberately try and attract attention so that you can voice your policies? Do you see it's beneficial, the publicity you get?
I don't agree. I don't deliberately seek attention. I just try and be, you know, myself. And because people in this country and the media isn't geared in to take on people like me, then it looks unusual. But I can assure you there are a lot more like me around.
Yes, in the striped shirt. Yes.
Do you feel that black people can only be represented by black politicians?
I think that at the moment, only black politicians can properly represent the aspirations of black people. I don't think that this is a situation that need last a very long time. But I think now, because they have been so underrepresented within the society and so discriminated against, I think that it's important now for black people to actually, for black MPs to actually represent black people.
So does that mean that, for example, in constituencies where black people are represented by, say, a white Labour MP, you don't think they feel entirely satisfied with that representation?
No, I don't think that that's necessarily true. But what I am saying is that there should be, you know, we should have a proper representation within Parliament. And, you know, at the moment, because of racism, I think that at the moment only black people can truly represent black MPs can truly represent black people. That doesn't mean to say that I'm criticizing white MPs who have black people within their constituencies.
Yes, do you want to come in?
The Conservative Party is usually associated with colonialism. Do you view black people who vote Conservative as traitors?
I think the Labour Party has had a fair share of colonialism and imperialism as well. Don't forget that Harold Wilson was the Prime Minister when Ian Smith declared UDI, and they didn't send in the gunboats or do anything about it on the basis of kith and kin. I don't think that the Tory party has the monopoly of this repression of black people and imperialism. But to answer your question, black people who vote Conservative, do I consider them to be traitors? No, I don't consider them to be traitors. I think that people vote on the basis mainly of class interest, and they are black capitalists, black business people who will find a home in the Tory party, and, you know, good luck to them.
Yes.
Prior to the general election, the Labour Party suffered a serious division caused by the so-called loony left. You yourself were supposed to be involved in this, so I'll put it to you that perhaps you were partly to blame for the Labour Party, in fact, losing the general election.
Well, I know, I think it was Dennis Healy who said that there was only one loony left, and that was Margaret Thatcher. However, I think that this whole question of what particularly Labour councils did, and especially London Labour Council, has been blown out of all proportion by the media. I think that there was a conspiracy between the Tories and the media to latch on to something and then blow it up and to make an issue of it. I think that what we did in local government was to fight against discrimination and to fight against problems that ordinary people face. Ordinary people that we represent would come up to us and say, we are discriminated because of X, Y, and Z reasons. Will you do something about it? Now, in the past, Labour councils have said, oh, yes, we know that you're discriminated against, and one day your time will come. But what we said in London was that we were going to try and fight to ensure that those people get a fair share. So we took some positive steps in order to try and ensure that. Now, if that's being loony, well then, you know, I mean, the question is, who are the loonies? Is it the media or is it the Labour Council?
Do you want to come back in on that?
Well, because you were sort of, you went against Neil Kinnock on the policy of rate capping, for example, and, you know, I just wondered whether you felt that you were responsible for the Labour Party losing the election because of your going against the party.
Well, maybe without going into too many details about rate capping.
Yeah. Well, I think that we were fighting for policies that we had put before the electorate and we were elected on. All those things that we did, we'd actually told the people beforehand that we were going to do them. So I feel that, you know, that we are entitled to do that, regardless of what the Labour Party said. Now, I accept that maybe we did lose some votes because of our policies. But if we did that on the basis of a principled stand that we took, well, then that's the way it is.
Alistair Clark, second back row.
Before the election, the Labour Party stated that they would conduct the campaign on policies, not personalities. They then did exactly the opposite. Was this because they did not think they could win the election with their policies?
Well, I'm not sure whether I would agree with you on that analysis. I think that our policies were reasonable, but our policies weren't credible enough. I think that that's my feeling, that particularly our economic policies, people just didn't believe that we could have this bonanza and increase everything. I think that the way in which the campaign was fought was very well done. I think that the campaign centered around Neil Kinnock. And I think that it needed to center around Neil Kinnock because we needed to revive a spirit of socialism within our ranks. Because you will remember that, that before the election, we were coming third in the polls. And by after the campaign, we came second and we did well.
Yes.
Do you feel that you've had unfair publicity within the press?
I think by and large, yes. I don't think that the television and radio have been too bad, but I think that particularly the tabloid press, you know, I mean, they've been very unfair. In that they've made up stories. I think recently the University of London, Goldsmiths College, did a survey of the amount of loony left stories and found that 90% of them were untrue and that something like 60% of them were just totally made up by the reporters.
Well, a lot of the questioners want to ask you about the police and your relationship with the police and young people's relationship with the police. Matthew Gould.
I live in Hackney, which is a neighbouring borough to Tottenham. The general feel among youth of my age of all racial backgrounds is that the police harassment in that area is way out of line. Do you think there's anything that can be done about this?
Well, if I had a magic answer, I mean, we would have improved the relationship. Unfortunately, I think that to some extent the Metropolitan Police almost, fights against any efforts to try and improve the relationships between young people and the police. Recently in Tottenham, and I know the Hackney situation, and I know the Trevor Monoville and all the people who have suffered in Hackney as a result of police action. Recently, we've tried to establish links with the police, and we actually set up a good relationship between local police officers and young people, but this was broken because they transferred the local police chief superintendent out of the area. So it means it's almost as if someone is working against trying to have a good relationship. But I think that the way forward is by having the young people meeting directly with police officers, the chief police officers, not the not subordinates, not the people in the beat, but the chief officers on a regular basis and ironing out things. And also by police accountability. I'm sorry, you're going to have to give me a chance to answer because these are very serious questions and I don't want people to get the wrong impression. I think that the way in which we can improve police relationship, not only with young people but with the community, is by making the police accountable so that at a regular meeting between the police and people of the community, people can tell the police what are their priorities. The police have their own priorities, and people have theirs, which are different, and I think that you need to bring those closer together.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be a good idea to bring more black people, coloured people, whatever, into the police force? Wouldn't that perhaps solve the problem to a larger extent?
Yeah, that on the face of it sounds like a good answer, but until the police force is able to accept black people and black recruits, then there is a problem. You see, the difficulty is that that black people have joined the police force, and a lot of them have left because of racism within the police force itself. And also the relationship between a black police officer and the black community has yet to be sorted out properly. So I think that there are a number of things that have to be sorted out before we can just say that this is a panacea for all ills.
Yes.
To what extent do you think racial events such as the Tottenham riots and the Toxteth riots have been worsened by renter mobs. And how do you propose to clamp down on such troublemakers?
I don't understand your reference to renter mobs.
Groups that come in merely to make trouble.
Have you got any evidence that this has happened in Tottenham?
No, but in Toxteth, I spent 5 years there, and the people in the locality were worried that the trouble was not being caused by them themselves, but by outsiders coming in.
Well, I mean, I find that difficult to believe, particularly in Liverpool 8, because it's such a strong community, and it's a community that rejects any strangers who comes in to try and disturb them, as we've seen recently with the case of Sam Bond, who was taken on by the Liverpool Council. I certainly don't believe that it's a question of renter mobs. My experience has been that the people have had a genuine reason for rebelling against the society, and this was borne out in Tottenham, certainly, by the committee of inquiry that was set up by Lord Gifford. And they certainly came to the conclusion that people were consistently, over a period of time, harassed by police officers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I come from a rural area, which is totally different from the cities, and we don't even have police in our village. So, of course, the police, to me, make a different image to me than to the children in a city. So can you explain exactly to me what's happening, just so I know?
Just, I mean, if we could have quite a brief resume of what the objections are, then, perhaps.
All right. I think that the... what happens is, I think it starts from the general economic situation within the inner cities, where there is unemployment. So some of the young people get up to mischief and so on. They're then brought into conflict with the police, and then the police react to them in a very, very difficult, in a very, very different manner than they would react to other people. And we also have the difficulty, of course, if there is, apart from the general harassment of young people by police, if you're black as well, we have a particular phenomenon in the inner city of that playing a part, so that we get the this clash between the young people and the police, and it just keeps exacerbating all the time.
Back row.
Yeah. Do you not think the police have a job to do? They don't set out to go and get blacks. Mm. If a black is acting out of order, then surely he should be given into trouble.
Yes, I accept that. I've nowhere have I ever said that criminals, whether they be black or white, should be let off.
On the basis of colour.
I accept what you're saying, but one also has to say that the police have got to set an example, and if they have got this unique power, they are the only people who could deprive you and I of our freedom, our personal freedom. They can lock us up.
Now, do you not think that it's the black that harass the police? It's the opposite way around.
Well, I think that there are some instances of black people behaving out of order. I'm not disputing that, but what I am saying is that when consistently we get evidence that the police, without provocation, actually go in and harass young black people, then I think that we've got to take something against it.
Yes, next.
Do you believe in the principle of positive discrimination for black people?
I believe in positive action. I think that there's a bit of a contradiction to say positive discrimination, because discrimination is a negative thing. But I believe in positive action, and the reason I believe in positive action is that if you have a group of people who have been consistently discriminated against for centuries, I don't think that you can expect those people to be at the same level as other people within the society. So that if you want an equal society, you've got to take action in order to bring those people up to the level. So that's why I believe in positive action.
Yes.
You've said in the past, Mr. Grant, that you think it's very important for all white children to come into contact at school with black culture and, if possible, black teachers. But do you not think that this could be dangerous? It could go to the other extreme, that their own culture is swamped by being taught this black culture.
Well, I think Margaret Thatcher in 1979 raised this point, didn't she? She said, we're in danger of being swamped by an alien culture. And the moment she said that, every National Front member then tore up their cars and joined the Tory party. However, there's certainly no danger of that. Are you trying to tell me that 2 million people could swamp 60 million? I mean, that's a physical impossibility. But to go further into your point, now, the reason that I say that all white children should know what's happened is that, let's say, I don't know where you come from, but let's say you come from the Highlands, and there are no black people there. You're a teacher. You're trained as a teacher, and so on. You then as a teacher can teach anywhere within Britain. Now, you might come to Tottenham. to teach. And then once you come to Tottenham, you have no knowledge at all about black children, their traditions or anything, you would be at a disadvantage. And you would be, you know, I mean, it would be unfair on you, apart from everybody else, apart from the children.
How then would you say that you would deal with the recent Dewsbury incident?
Well, I think that the Dewsbury thing is pure racism.
I mean, this is where a group of parents are not wanting to send their children to a specific school, but are demanding to be allowed to send their children to another school.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, I think that that's just a racist reaction, because I think that, you know, that there is no question of, you know, English not being taught properly within the school and so on. And I think that the parents there are just using the general atmosphere that has been created by the Tories in terms of parental choice opt out of the out of that state system.
You're claiming it's racist because the school that the parents don't want to send their children to has a lot of blacks in it.
Yes, I mean, if you speak, I mean, you know, I just came back from the Caribbean, and there are English diplomats there. They send their kids to mainly black schools, majority black schools. There's no problem. They learn English, they get the same treatment and so on like anybody else, and there is no problem with that. So I think that these parents are just being racist.
Yes.
Isn't it true that most of this discrimination is due to the fact that some white people just don't want to know about other cultures?
I think that, I think that there are some people who are just racist and you can't do anything with them, but I don't think that that's the position for the majority of the people. I think that the majority of the people feel that, you know, that somehow other cultures are not as important and so on as the English culture, or they will not accept that being English means more than what has traditionally been put forward as the British culture or as the English culture.
Yes. As a socialist, you believe everyone is equal, yet you advocate black sections. Surely discrimination, even when positive, is not compatible with this fundamental principle.
Now, when you say black sections, you mean black sections organised officially within the Labour Party?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't believe that everyone is equal. I believe everyone should have equal opportunity, I mean, which is slightly different. But the question of black sections, the purpose of having black sections within the Labour Party is to fight for equality. As it might sound strange that you create a separate section in order to fight for equality, but unfortunately that's the way it is. Because particularly within the Labour Party, in order to get anything through, you have to organise yourselves and you have to be organised. And the only way that some policy decisions which greatly affect black people. Take, for instance, on the question of health. There isn't much done about sickle cell anemia, which is an ailment that affects black people only. And a lot of black people die from it. And the health service, the government, do very little about sickle cell anemia. Now, it has been necessary for black people within the Labour Party to get together to work out the policies with regard to sickle cell anemia, for example. So that could be put forward within the policy-making framework of the Labour Party. Or else nothing will be done. People just keep on paying lip service. So the primary purpose of organising black sections is to fight so that we can be equal.
Yes.
In what ways do you feel the blacks are discriminated against? Surely if they have won merits, then they have the same chance as white people.
I don't think so, because I think that the problem is that white people perceive black people as being inferior. Some white people, let's say. And the system also discriminates against people, so that before black people are given a chance to show whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, they're already wiped out. Let me give you a simple example. A white receptionist sitting at a desk, just receiving callers, could discriminate against a black person. I mean, a white receptionist, one might say, doesn't have much power. But in terms of someone coming up, a black person going in, looking for a job, that receptionist could discriminate against that person and stop them from coming forward by saying, no, there are no jobs here, when the receptionist knows that there are jobs available. So that's one very simple way where a white person has this great amount of power over black people.
Yes, do you want to come in?
Thank you. Just to follow on from your point about the white receptionist being discriminative, do you think it's possible to legislate for people's racist attitudes?
I don't think that you can legislate against people's attitudes, but I think you can legislate against the effects of people's attitudes, so that if a person is racist, and I can't tell whether someone hates me or not just because of my color, but what I can tell is if that person discriminates against me and doesn't give me my due. So you can legislate to stop people actually using that power in order to discriminate.
Yes.
When you say that some people might discriminate against you because of your color, do you think that alternately some blacks might discriminate against whites because of their color?
Yes, I think that that's true. I don't think that you can argue against that. However, the difficulty about that is that there aren't a lot of black people in a position of power to discriminate against anybody. And that's the situation. But yes, I would accept that it is possible. And in countries, very few, mind you, in countries where there are black people who are in a position of power, they could, discriminate against white people.
Stephen White.
Why do you think it's a good idea to withdraw British troops from Northern Ireland?
Why do I think it's a good idea?
Yeah.
Because I think that the only way that the Northern Ireland issue is going to be settled is when the people of Northern Ireland are left to work out their own destiny. And I think that by having British troops there, it is an incumbent to that process. And I think that the quicker the troops get out, the better.
Yes.
Surely, though, the people of Northern Ireland fought in two wars for Britain. Surely they have a right, if that's what they were then, to stay British. Surely they have a right. They've given their lives, fought for the cause. If they want to maintain their links with that cause, they should be allowed to.
Yeah, but a lot of people fought for Britain. I mean, people in the Caribbean fought for Britain, and they've stopped us coming to this country now. People in India, the Gurkhas, that were some of the fiercest fighters in the war, they fought for Britain. But I haven't heard anybody getting up and saying that the Gurkhas should have a right to enter Britain and or people in that country. And I think that, I think that this is the whole debate is being couched in the wrong terms. I think that the people, the main people who are responsible for Ireland must be the Irish, the people in the South. And I think that the government has recognized that. That's why they've started off this disagreement, which will, which is only the basis, the beginning of a much firmer agreement in the future. But I certainly don't accept that Britain, just as I don't accept that Britain has a right to the Falkland Islands or the Malvinas, I don't accept that. I think that that should belong to Argentina, it belonged to the Argentinians, and so on. I think that what Britain should do is Britain should try and ensure and negotiate so that the people there have got a fair deal and are not persecuted and so on for being Protestant. And I think that that's their role. But I don't think that that Britain could insist on people remaining British, so to speak, against the wishes of the majority of the people on the island.
Many of the objections, of course, and many of the problems of racism stemmed from people's objections to immigration. I wonder what your views are on immigration. How much or how little immigration control would you allow?
I think the immigration issue is difficult because we're not clear as to the facts and figures. What I'm sure about is that immigration laws are class laws, because I've never heard of any rich black person, for instance, having any difficulty in coming into Britain. It's only when you're poor that people begin to ask questions at the ports and so on. I believe reluctantly that there has got to be some measure of control. But I think that there are a whole number of things that need to be done. Apart from looking at the whole question of racist immigration controls, I think we need to look at why people are coming to Britain. And the reason why people are coming to Britain is because Britain has virtually exploited the natural resources and so on of those countries. So that when we look at the question of immigration, we should also look at the question of trade, look at the question of aid, and make sure that those countries have got enough resources so that people could stay there, for instance. I mean, I'm sure that people would rather stay in the sun, thank you very much, than to come to a cold, windy climate. So for them to come here, there must be some extraordinary circumstances. So perhaps we should be looking at relieving those circumstances, so that when we talk about immigration, we talk about it in terms of the whole question of the third world and the whole question of black countries.
You, of course, were one of those immigrants when you originally came here, and now you're a Member of Parliament.
True.
I wonder, do you think that equality will finally be achieved when we have a black cabinet minister? And do you think you could be that first black cabinet minister?
I have no such ambitions. Let me say that straight off. I think that, equality wouldn't be achieved, even if you get a black prime minister. I don't think so. I think that this is a long-term goal, and it's something that we have to strive for. However, there are certain things that help that process of striving for equality, like having black MPs, black councillors, black leaders of council, black cabinet ministers, and so on. So to answer your question, it's just one step on the way.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. But in the meantime, Bernie Grant, thank you for being open to question.